Hello and welcome to Argue the Toss at GameIndustry.com. I'm Shella.
And I'm Drew, and together we're arguing about the things that really matter in games and films and stuff.
Indeed we are, and it is Season 5, Episode 5.
Mm-hmm.
All the fives.
Five.
Yeah. And today's episode topic, Drew?
We have been to see the new Marvel movie, Captain Marvel. The captain of all Marvel. That's stupid. I don't know why I said that. We went out to see that last night, so it's kind of fresh in our minds.
Mm-hmm.
And today we're going to be talking about it.
We are. Lots of talk about it. Because I wasn't really aware of the trolling of Captain Marvel. I don't know. I must have like really efficient filters on my Twitter feed or something. I'd completely missed that. In fact, I missed that Black Panther had the same deal going on. All I saw was joy around Black Panther. So obviously my bubble is working really well. Apparently it was getting bombed with sort of reviews before it was even out, like one starred on Rotten Tomatoes and things before it even came out, and people saying it was gonna flop and whatnot. And it's actually made more money than Black Panther at this stage, which, having seen it, is kind of like, okay.
We kind of have, for once we have kind of varying opinions on this. I think I like this a lot more than you did. Having thought about it, and I mean, we were going to record this yesterday evening, but we decided to delay it to let it kind of settle, which I think is always a good idea with a film. And I think I like it more now, now that I've kind of gone back and dwelt on it a bit. I guess not for you then.
No, I'm just feeling completely out of sync with the world on this one. I just thought it was average. I think Marvel's been knocking it out of the park with the last few films.
Yeah.
And this falls decidedly flat for me. After those.
I don't necessarily disagree with you in that kind of Marvel has really been doing well lately. We've had a string of really good Marvel films, and compared to those, this is not great. This is not outstanding in the Marvel universe, but I still think it was a good time, and I would sort of put it's kind of solid mid-tier. It's not great, but it's not, you know, doldrums.
I'd probably put it lower than that. Somewhere around Iron Man 2. So should we start with a kind of synopsis of the story overview?
Yeah, sure. So,
do you want to
do that?
Well, we'll give it a stab between. So it's kind of a sort of simple but sort of complicated at the same time, because she has this sort of duality where she's human but also Kree, but she's forgotten her human life. So when we meet her, she's Kree, and she's struggling to regain memories, and at the beginning it's not quite clear what's going on with that. If it's some sort of Thor situation where she's a hero that inhabits humans, which, you know, Thor doesn't do in the movies really, but does in the comics. So it kind of becomes clear, and I kind of liked the way they obfuscate the story and like put us in her confusion. You know, it is quite sort of muddled at the beginning. You're not clear what's going on, which is kind of brave for a Marvel film, because they're usually pretty much linear, self-explanatory stories. What's the next stage? You do the next bit.
Okay,
so that's the setup.
Yeah, so she's kind of part of this Kree task force. She's a soldier for Star Force, I think it's called, and they get sent on missions against the Skrull, who are the the big enemy of the Kree, and they are shapeshifters and they can impersonate anybody. So it, which kind of sets up a like you're expecting there to be sort of a kind of the thing like subplot where you don't know who's who, but it never really goes that way. It's not really utilized to a great extent.
Yeah, so it's like, because the Skrull are, you know, an established Marvel enemy, and, you know, obviously Secret Invasion and stuff, so you're thinking, yeah, it's like clearly setting up for, cool, there's going to be lots of sort of double identities and stuff like that, but no, not really.
No, it's used for a couple of jokes, and there are some scenes, like, every time it happens, it's obvious who is a Skrull, which kind of... I think sort of defeats the point of it. Just none of that is really explored very well. There are no moments, this is kind of an anti-spoiler, but there are no moments where, you know, someone who you previously thought was definitely a good guy suddenly turns out to be a Skrull. It's like, it's always a 3-minute thing from introduction of that character to them revealing themselves.
Yeah.
Like, the kind of opening is that they're on this mission, and Carol, well, her name is Veers at the start of it, and or Captain Marvel, I guess we can call her, even though she doesn't really use that name in the film.
No.
She gets captured by the Skrull, and they kind of probe her memory to find out what her secrets are, which is a new technique they've developed, which is worrying the Kree. And they find human memories in her memory. And during her escape, she kind of lands up on Earth.
Yeah. In the 90s. Don't forget it's the 90s. Because you might forget.
Yes, you might. So, like, immediately, as soon as she gets to Earth, she, like, it's, you know, they obviously have to set what decade it is and inform you. But, like, she crashes into a Blockbuster video, which is still open. And she shoots the head off like a True Lies cardboard display. And it's like, okay, you're overdoing it already.
Yeah.
It very much has a bit of Stranger Things syndrome in that it can't stop telling you that it's the 90s.
Right, yeah.
Even when it's not necessarily relevant. And it is cool in places. It is, you know, because this is, like, I was a 90s kid. This is this is my decade, so the nostalgia hit me very kind of...
Yeah, absolutely. I was like, yeah, it's cool to be back in the 90s. The 90s were awesome.
Yeah. And there's, like, a lot of visual reference which calls back films from that period. There's a bit where she rides off on a motorbike, which is very Terminator 2, and it looks like Terminator 2, and I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. But there is a lot of that stuff.
It's just kind of, and then the music kind of that started getting on my nerves. Like, the first, like, a couple, you're like, fine, but then when they rolled out Nirvana, I was like, oh, I was like, Kurt wouldn't have done this.
No, I think we both had that reaction.
Okay. That made me sad.
To be honest, even though, it's a bit in your face, I liked the soundtrack, and it mostly fit pretty well. I thought, like, there are some really on-the-nose moments. There's a big fight scene which is covered by Just a Girl, No Doubt. And I thought that, lyrically, that's a bit direct. But that song is a really great song to set a fight to.
Yeah, they are good. It's got
a lot of momentum.
I mean, the soundtrack is good. They picked good songs. It was just, it's a lot of 90s girl power going on. And it was just, I just found it a bit grating in the end. Even though I liked the songs and I was kind of like tapping along.
Yeah.
And then it had that Guardians of the Galaxy thing. Which I think is something the film does a lot. It's just like borrowed a lot of things. It doesn't seem to have its own identity. It's like, in places it's a bit Star Wars, and then it's a bit Guardians of the Galaxy, and, you know, then it's a little bit Thor, and it's, yeah, it just is a little bit of everything else and not really itself, which is just something I feel about the character overall.
The character itself?
Yeah.
So Captain Marvel herself.
Yeah. She's not that interesting a character.
No.
And her antagonists, well, yeah, I mean, we'll have to talk about that later. Because at first the antagonists aren't really that interesting. Well, there isn't one really. I guess it's her inner turmoil or something. Yeah, and it just, yeah, the whole thing just was a bit flat for me. I was bored mostly. But there are some
So I
funny
was
bits.
certainly
It's not a
bored.
bad film, but yeah. Yeah, sorry.
I was certainly bored in the beginning section, which so it's kind of that infiltration scene where so the beginning is fine. She has this kind of fight with Jude Law, like where they're training and they're discussing, you know, they're kind of setting up her character in between like the fight, and I thought that was quite. I thought that was really good. I thought it give you good insights into both their characters, and then after that, they go on this kind of infiltration mission to a world that has been sort of infiltrated by the Skrull, and you're introduced to a lot of characters very quickly. You're introduced to the team that she works with. There's a you know a, an alien kind of ambassador or whatever it is, and someone who is likely to have been impersonated, and it's very kind of complex, and you're not invested in any of the characters yet. It's not like it's not a kind of I should call it, well, she's called Veers at the time. I'm going to keep sort of switching names, I think. It's not focused on her very much. You don't see much of what's going on with her, and the rest of the team, they're kind of interesting, but it's very clear that you're not being set up to kind of care about these guys. They just do a little bit of one-linering and back and forth, and then they go off to do their things. And I, not being invested in any of the characters, I was sitting there thinking, okay, why am I watching this? This isn't particularly interesting.
Yeah, it's true, and it's they're kind of like a video game squad, aren't they? In that, you know, like any of these people could die at any moment, but they're good at quips in the hangar just about, before you're about to drop into the landing zone, which is exactly what we got. But I actually that was some of my favorite dialogue was that little sort of repartee between them. I quite liked it, and so it does kind of feel like at one point, because when you see the credits, there are a lot of writers on this film, which suggests that this script has been kicked around for quite a while. And it feels like at one point this was going to be a thing and a focus, and we were going to have more of her sort of tactical, sort of squad-based kind of story. But then it feels like this has maybe been edited down and, you know, like just kept it as a very cursory sort of catalyst, and then dropped. Yeah, so it just kind of feels completely out of place.
It's weird because they're all kind of very like if you take them individually, they're all kind of very interesting or interesting looking characters. They're all very visually distinct, but there's something about them which they're just not brought to the forefront, and they feel like, you know, all of the members of the squad and aliens who get killed in the first encounter. They were just there as set dressing in the background, really.
And they're all ethnic minorities with blue skin paint on.
There is that.
And then I thought it was weird that all the main players are not blue aliens, but absolutely everybody else is. Like on the Kree planet, like you have Jude Law, who's not blue, and I was like, there's no real consistency with this world. I don't really understand what's going on.
Yeah, because she's like, she's presented as being Kree at the beginning of the film, but her skin is not blue, and it's never addressed. It's never, okay, well, what's the difference between her and these people? And they just kind of accept it, and that's it. And it's sort of, you want to know. You're sitting there thinking, okay, why is she different? And the film never really has her ask.
No, exactly. And why is Jude Law different? And why does the supreme intelligence look like Jeanette Benning but not blue? But then when they go on that public transport thing, like everybody is like green or blue or something. And yeah, it was just a bit weird. I was like, oh, okay, so are they like diff like some elite race or something? Which kind of goes against the whole message of the film, I'd say. So yeah, that was weird. But thankfully, we're not on that planet very long. We're mostly on 90s Earth. And then it does pick up and it does become fun.
Yes. So she gets down to Earth and she kind of immediately runs into Nick Fury, who happens to show up.
Oh, it's Coulson first, isn't it? Is the
Oh, yeah.
first person we see. Yeah.
It's some cop, and then Coulson calls in Nick Fury, and he shows up, and he's obviously it's 1995, so he's a lot younger. Like I thought they did a really good kind of job of de-aging him. He looks, it's one of those things where I don't know how they've done it. It's probably, a mix of CGI and makeup, but he looks, he's convincingly, late 30s, early 40s in this.
I didn't even notice.
No, exactly. This was the thing. That's
I thought it was just a black don't crack thing because I haven't seen Samuel L. Jackson like for a long time, like interviewed out of a film. So,
And I mean, I guess there are elements of that, but Samuel L. Jackson is 70 years old now.
is he
Like he
really?
really is, yeah. And
Wow.
he just doesn't look it in this film. You completely buy him, and the effects are so good that you just after the first scene where you're like, oh my God, he looks so young, you just don't notice it again. It's just, that's what he looks like.
I didn't even, I was just like, I'd looked at his hair because it's obviously he's got sort of, I was looking at his hair texture a bit and I was like, oh, he's got like flecks of gray these days. I was like, because of course he has no hair in the, I'd forgotten that. I was like, that's weird that he's got like gray, but I don't remember him being gray in the later films. So that's what I was thinking about was his hair. Because his face looked fine to me. Yeah, and he's pre-patch Nick Fury,
He is.
and he has more sort of a softer personality, which was quite fun. Yeah, it's him before he's, it's like a sort of in an innocent stage before he knows all the shit that's going down.
Which I really liked. It's just really nice to see him as a younger and kind of less commanding character. The reaction of internet men to that has been slightly less positive,
Oh,
predictably enough.
really? That's so interesting, isn't
So there's
it?
been a lot of kind of YouTube videos and wherever the worst people hang out, that you'll see the
Those emasculated.
exactly, emasculated and castrated is the word that I've seen a lot
Oh,
as
of
well.
course they use castrated.
Yeah, I know. It's like the way to give yourselves away, guys. But yeah, so the reaction has been that it emasculates or castrates him because he's kind of consistently in a sidekick role here. But to think of that as a failure is, I think, to miss the point of Nick Fury, who's he's not just Samuel L. Jackson being a badass. The undertone of him is usually that he's the smartest guy in the room. And yes, so like even in like the first Avengers film, he's always ahead of everyone else. He's ahead of the council. He's ahead of the Avengers. He's predicted that something like the Avengers is going to happen, and he's put these guys together. And I thought that was carried through in a very cool way because within about a minute of meeting Carol, this he's figured out that she knows more than he does. She's experienced with this, and he doesn't know anything. So it makes sense for him to step back and take a sidekick role. That's what he'd do. So yeah, I thought he was just generally really good in this.
Yeah, he was. He was great. They were really good together. It was like the best thing about the film. He was cool. Yeah, I loved that. And that, Nick Fury turns out to be a cat guy, which was just like really great. And she's just like, what is with the cat? She's like walks past it and he's like, hey, kitty. Yeah, it was great. So it's basically it's a buddy movie with Nick Fury and Captain Marvel or Carol Danvers or whatever you want to call her. And it works really well. And I think one of the things I like that they didn't do was they didn't do, because they've already done that with Thor and she's already got echoes of Thor. They didn't do the I don't know this world thing and I don't understand what TV is or whatever it might be. So I thought that was quite good. They just kind of got on with the story.
Yeah, she's quick enough to. Yeah, she's very quick to adapt. It's kind of implied that they've one of her Kree team has been to Earth before, and the joke is that it's, you know, a shithole. Which, like, you see what she means. Like, they portray it as the 90s, and they, you know, they show the limitations that we have. One of the best kind of running jokes throughout the film is that they're all using, like, 1995 computer technology. So she, when she tries to search the internet, she has to do it on dial-up, and she gets disconnected a bunch of times. And there's a, you know, everyone's using CD-ROMs to exchange information.
Yeah, they take ages
to load, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, what's happening? It's loading. Nick Fury just takes a sip of iced tea.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the 90s, that's what we do. We wait for stuff to load.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, those were the nice 90s gags that I liked. Mm. Yeah, it was cool. So
we should probably talk about... we've talked about Samuel L. Jackson and Nick Fury. We should probably talk about Brie Larson as well.
Yeah.
I mean, she's great. She was always going to be good at this. This is a very kind of good role for her. It's not surprising that she does a really great job. She has kind of a very Buffy-like energy to her, I thought. Mm-hmm. She gets those kind of... Mm-hmm. She does a lot of those kind of off-the-cuff one-liners, mm-hmm. where, you know, the film kind of pauses for a second during a fight to let her get a wisecrack in, and then, you know, it's back to it then. And, yeah, I thought that was really good. She's a sort of very compelling character, and it's when it is the scenes with her and Nick Fury, even though Nick Fury is doing Samuel L. Jackson is doing a really great job, she is the one who draws the eye. She's the one who you're paying attention to most of the time, partly just because she knows more and she has more confidence, but also because Brie Larson just does a really good sort of arresting job of playing her.
Okay.
You did not agree with that then.
I mean, she didn't do a bad job. Like, to call Carol Danvers a compelling character, it's like, I mean all the way through I was just like, why am I watching a Captain Marvel film? It's just not a very interesting character. Her backstory wasn't that compelling to me. She did a fine job of playing this kind of stoic, plucky woman who, you know, she's competent, she's a really good fighter, she's likable, she's nice, she's like this nice blonde, like heroic looking woman, but I just find that kind of bland. She didn't really have any flaws, you know. She's like Superman. She's kind of super good and heroic, and yeah, it's great that, you know, Marvel has one of those and blah blah, but you know, at least Superman has really good villains and has a really great weakness. And but she doesn't have any. She's overpowered once she gets her powers, which are kind of like dialed down for most of the film, and then they're kind of unleashed. And then she is like super high powered. I just find her kind of bland. I'm not like gunning for Captain Marvel. I'm not like looking forward to Captain Marvel 2.
No, that's there definitely seemed to be a few moments where they were setting a sequel up. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think she's a particularly well-written character for all the reasons you mentioned. I mean, when I said she was arresting, I was talking about the performance, which I think is really good. She doesn't have a lot of deep backstory.
No.
She's not. Yeah, and like you say, when she gets her powers, she is super overpowered. She can do kind of a lot of things really well.
Uh-huh.
Superman is a pretty good comparison, although she gets kind of more powers than that. She can do things that Superman wouldn't really be able to.
Yeah, yeah.
So she's, yeah.
And has no clear weakness.
No, in terms of power or in, you know, emotionally. She's very strong from the beginning.
Exactly, and she doesn't really have... I mean, she has her best friend. That's her only sort of, I suppose, sort of emotional weakness would be, you know, the classic kidnap the friend type of thing. But
yeah,
they don't go there with that. So,
But that's more of a tactical weakness than a sort of character weakness.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, Superman has all of those. He has power weakness and, you know, that emotional kind of attachment to people, which makes it, you know, which people can exploit. But she doesn't have anything. So I just found there's no sort of real jeopardy for her.
She doesn't have an arc. She's the same character at the end. She is at the beginning. She's just found out a few things.
Yeah, and
I think that's it's fine. It's forgivable. You know, she doesn't need. Not every hero needs to be, you know, tortured or have a really kind of strong development. You can have someone who's just the same character because that, you know, that's what Superman usually is in most of his kind of media. But it's so late in the game for Marvel. And they've been doing such a good job of having flawed and complex heroes lately that this feels like it would have been an amazing film if it had been released in like the first wave of Marvel, next to Captain America and Iron Man, and you know it really should have been because Captain Marvel has always been a tentpole of Marvel anyway.
Yeah, exactly. It feels like a first wave Marvel film. And it's just so late in the day because it's taken them so fucking long to get around to doing a female-led film that it's just kind of annoying and frustrating. And I'd probably have liked this a lot more like 10 years ago. So, yeah, it's kind of frustrating. And then there's also the thing where Jude Law, at the beginning, they're doing this fight training scene and he does the kind of Yoda sort of Jedi thing of saying, you know, like... you don't let your emotions take over, you're too emotional. But she really isn't an emotional character at all, and she's not emotional in that scene. She's kind of strong-headed and things, but she's not emotional at all. So the scene didn't make sense, and it's like, and I wish she was a bit emotional, because I thought they were going to flip it around and her emotions were going to be her power, but they didn't really... do that.
Yeah, I mean I'll defend that scene because I think it is doing something clever. We'd probably need to sort of talk beyond we're gonna have to put a spoiler wall up soon and start talking about the kind of latter half of the film, I think, but that is being the emotional thing that you need to control your emotions. I think that is subverted in an interesting way given what happens later in the film.
Okay.
So, yeah, I don't know if we want to put the spoiler wall up now, do we?
Okay. Oh, shall we quickly talk about the rest of the cast? Oh, we're on cast, aren't we? And we'll quickly cover off the rest of the key characters, because there is one really good character, which is Annette Bening's character, and then Talos, is it? Talos?
Yeah. Talos is Talos. Kind of the Skrull. Maybe not the leader, but definitely a big lieutenant in the Skrull.
Yeah, he's like the key player for them. He's their sort of voice. He's just like a cool baddie. He gets all the best lines. And he is like, you're right, he does have that Buffy feel. Because I thought that I was like, he is like a Buffy demon who turns up and is the funniest one. And kind of like steals their thunder every time he's in a scene. And he did that. And I just loved that. He was one of my favorite things about it. He was really cool. And then there's Annette Bening's character, who is the sort of flight, because Carol Danvers was a pilot. So they get in the Top Gun reference, you know, like in the bar where, you know, like Tom, and she gets a Tom Cruise style character saying, I don't know, can girls even fly or something like that. So she's like the flight lieutenant or whatever, the sort of, she's actually an engineer, isn't she? So she's, you know, kind of really up there in the sort of Air Force, and she's like kind of a cool character that turns up in lots of different ways that you know, would be spoilerific if we went into it, but she's obviously like a really strong female presence, you know, in Carol's life, and an important figure in her life, which is cool.
yeah She did. I mean, she didn't get a huge amount to do. She's there and she plays this inspiring figure, but that's kind of all she is. There's slightly more kind of plot depth to her, but not much more emotional depth.
In
any of the ways in which she shows up. She was fine. I just wish they'd given her a little bit more because, you know, there's potential to have an interesting character there, but she just kind of functions as a plot device.
Yeah. It's funny because it's kind of like two films that have been mushed together.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd have liked, because the kind of Scree, I know, Skrull.
The Scree and the Krull.
Yeah. The Skrull Kree storyline is kind of like, I'd say that'd be Captain Marvel 2. And maybe the Annette Bening sort of the pilot story would be Captain Marvel 1.
Yeah.
And it feels like they've put these two films, because they should have done these films earlier.
Yeah, exactly. They wouldn't be able to do the kind of the Annette Bening origin story thing on its own now, because we've seen it a million times.
Yeah, exactly.
You can see why they brought the Kree-Skrull stuff to the forefront.
Yeah.
But
I'd have been like totally up for let's like do the 90s thing and have the music and look, it's like Top Gun, but it's with women because, you know, we're all progressive now and Marvel's the best.
Yeah.
I'd have been up for that like back then, but they didn't do that.
No. Yeah. So yeah, it does suffer as a film for how long they've let it sort of languish.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, yeah. Okay, any other characters we want to...
Jude Law is...
Oh, yes.
I guess as...
We forgot him, he said.
Yeah, I guess before we... I think we probably need to put the spoiler wall up here, because if we're going to talk about Jude Law's character... Yeah. Okay, so from here on out, we're going to be discussing openly kind of spoilers and the plot of this film. And if you haven't seen it, you probably are going to want to not listen any further, because there are big twists in the film, or maybe not, depending on how familiar you are with the kind of Captain Marvel character and universe, but at this point we're going to be revealing it. So if, like me, you knew nothing about Captain Marvel before going in, now is a good time to stop and go and see it if you want to. Jude Law, who is plays a kind of dual role as her mentor at the beginning and her, the villain at the end.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's an interesting setup. It's been done before in other superhero films, obviously, but it's an easy way to get a lot of kind of emotional weight and pathos out of encounters, and the film manages none of that. Mm-hmm. He is so boring. Mm-hmm. That's so boring that when I was doing my notes for this, I kept forgetting that he was in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's just not a great villain at all.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. We just don't really know why. Yeah, he's just, I don't know, is it just that he hates the Skrull? Is that his thing?
That's his kind of thing. He's kind of just a Kree.
Yeah.
You know, zealot, not a zealot, kind of, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's just. Yeah, that's all I have to say about him, really. The end fight isn't. It's just a weird one. He's just there to serve a purpose because she had to fight against someone.
He's very blah. A complete waste of Jude Law.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm mixed on Jude Law. I like him in some things. I don't like him so much in others. But
exactly,
he's better than whatever this was.
Yeah.
To go back to something we were just talking about earlier, that this kind of
the emotion.
Yeah, the emotion. He's saying you need to hold your emotions back.
Mm-hmm.
He's not being honest in that scene. They're kind of conditioning her not to use her powers because they know that if she did, she would be the most deadly thing in the universe to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was kind of a cool subversion where at the end she realizes that, you know, she doesn't actually need to control her emotions. They're all fine. And
Think they needed to give her some emotions.
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree, but.
Cause for that to really work, because I didn't really notice that I did, you know, that she was like unleashing and sort of opening her heart or whatever, you know, whatever yoga term you want to use for it. But yeah, that scene didn't work because she wasn't showing any emotions. I know he was trying to manipulate her, but I still think, you know, she's like really confused. She's like got these memory flashes. She's having these nightmares, but she's not very emotional about them. Like when you come wake up from a nightmare, it's really horrible and you want to talk to someone about them, but she doesn't seem to engage with her emotions at all, which just kind of undermines that whole turning the thing on its head. You know, she's never like constantly struggling to control her emotions, which I think would have been good. And then for her to finally let go, because obviously that's something women are always berated for being too emotional. So I get the power of that message, but it just wasn't conveyed very well.
It's not something that she struggles with.
No.
I see what you mean. I still think it works, but I see a point. It's not as if she is held back by that later on, because every time she does show emotion, you know, things go well for her. She, you know, it's how she kind of escapes from the scroll thing at the beginning, and but there's no. You're not encouraged to think about it. You're not,
No.
yeah. It's not focused on.
No.
Oh,
Scroll
yeah.
and the
So,
cat.
yes. So, like I say, I had no familiarity with Captain Marvel or the Skrull or the Kree before. That was kind of why I was so excited for this film, was because it was a hero that I knew literally nothing about.
That's nice.
So I don't really know how the Kree-Skrull War is portrayed in the comics and source material, but I was completely surprised by the big twist halfway through this film. And you know me, I'm someone who has a pretty good eye for upcoming plot twists. All right.
That's a good thing. I admire that
I thought it was really good. So, you know, to be explicit about it, since we're beyond the spoiler wall, it turns out that the Skrull are the kind of oppressed race, and the
Oppressed,
Kree
yeah.
are they're this kind of imperialistic, you know, colonial military race who have just kind of been tricking their soldiers into fighting for them by posturing as the good guys.
Yeah, I really liked that. I thought it was great because yeah, the Skrull are generally just the bad, duplicitous, you know, sort of shape-shifting, can't trust them, scourge of the Marvel, especially crossover universe. So yeah, I thought that was really cool. Yeah, I didn't get to the end of Secret Invasion because I don't do crossovers. So yeah, I don't know if that became the big reveal, but the way it was being set up in Secret Invasion, it wasn't. And it was really tense in the comics. The fact that you didn't know who was who was it was really well laid out. And so yeah, so I wasn't expecting that, and it was really cool, and it just made me like Talos even more. It was great, really great. Yeah, I loved that.
It kind of. So when Talos sort of turns up at the beginning, and he's this big kind of evil overlord looking alien, but he doesn't. So something you said, which I thought was really was, de was definitely what I thought of it, was he was like a Buffy villain in that he's a really threatening looking guy, but he talks like someone who is, you know, like he's from New Zealand, but he's very kind of modern, and he's he doesn't sound like a big overlordish,
Oh
you know,
yeah.
you all
He,
thing.
yeah, he's not speaking in sort of gothic
No,
typeface.
exactly. And that was very dissonant for me when he was introduced. I thought, is this really our bad guy? Because he
Oh,
doesn't speak like one. He doesn't feel like a Marvel villain, and of course he doesn't. He isn't. And so his the scene where he kind of flips
he's kind of
that
a
on its head and.
Thor Ragnarok. Sorry to interrupt, but
No,
he's
you
kind
didn't.
of a Thor Ragnarok villain, though, in that way, isn't it? That's kind of set up that kind of tone of villain. And I suppose Guardians to a lesser extent, you know, that more comic tone.
And
sorry, I interrupted your flow.
No, you didn't really. I didn't have anything else to say about him. Speaking of Guardians villains, though, so Ronan the Accuser shows up again in this. So he was the he was the big villain in kind of Guardians of the Galaxy 1, and there's this subplot involving him in this film where, like, he's coming is the entire subplot. Every so often he, like, appears on a little hologram display to be like, hey, I'm getting closer.
Yeah, he's like the Emperor.
Yes, exactly. And then he turns up and Carol kind of beats up his fleet and he goes away again and that's it.
Runs away, yeah.
Yeah. Like, that whole thing could have been completely excised and the film would have lost nothing.
Nothing,
didn't need to see that character again. He wasn't even that good. So that was...
Yeah, that was another thing. There were just too many fights. It's like it's the Marvel problem. There were too many action scenes. I don't find that they were choreographed very well.
No.
So I was just kind of like bored through them. And then so she kind of wraps up the main plot with the Skrull and all that. But then she has to go and like, he's like, unleash the warheads. And I was like, oh, of course there are warheads.
Mm.
And then she just like punches them all.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, so that's done. And then he's like, ah, we will get her this time. And so he unleashes his fleet. It's like, dude, he's just punched your warheads.
Yeah. Like, and she like punches the first one and the rest of them kind of blow up by being in proximity, which I feel is not great design.
No.
But yeah, she kind of has to go into space and, like, she has a fist fight with some spaceships, which I guess is a cool concept in and of itself, but it's not relevant to anything.
No, exactly. It's just, like, extra just because we want to see her floating in space with all her sort of rainbow light around her, which was really cool, but she could have done that whilst waving goodbye to the Skrull.
Yeah.
Keep wanting to call the Scree now.
Yeah. And they are a little bit, once you kind of know the twist and know how they are kind of
similar.
Yeah, they're similar species and
it is easy
to confuse them.
There was just, they could have just cut it.
Because it's not a payoff for anything. It's not something where, like, the only thing that sets it up is that he shows up earlier and tells you that it's going to happen at the end.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Yeah, and obviously as a villain, he's in no jeopardy because we know he shows up in Guardians of the Galaxy. So there's this really strange and awkward moment where she beats up a bunch of, like, fighter ships, and then she destroys one of their main ships, and then she gets to Ronan the Accuser's ship, and for no reason, she just stops and kind of mean mugs it until he goes away, and he's like, oh, we'll be back for you. It's like, where the fuck? Sorry.
Yeah. And then she goes back down to fight Jude Law after that. Yeah, so it was just unnecessary, just needed cutting.
Yeah,
it was just too long, too many sort of confusing fights.
Did really like that Jude Law kind of final scene, though.
I
thought that was really good. So especially after the kind of first, like the opening scene where she has that fight, which is kind of, I think, the best fight in the film, solely because it actually informs character.
Right.
And then at the end, there is this like, okay, now you need to show me that you can control your emotions. And she just like blasts him. She's like, I don't. Which
it's
I thought
so
was a really good moment.
Yeah, it is. It comes full circle and it's a punchline to the whole thing. And it should have been boom, kind of done.
Yeah.
And then had, you know, the post credits things. It was it was a good note to end on. I suppose we should maybe do the sort of like classic comparisons. We sort of compared her, you know, archetype wise to Superman, but I suppose film wise, you know, the natural comparison is Wonder Woman, which was hugely successful. I think this is in terms of box office, it's I think it's outshone Wonder Woman in terms of box office, which I'm really surprised by, because I think Wonder Woman was a better film, and she's a more compelling character, and I just found the whole thing more charismatic.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I guess there's some juggernaut behind Captain Marvel for some reason. I suppose things that people are saying is that, Wonder Woman has her kind of skimpy outfit. Captain Marvel is, really sort of suited and booted. But then generally the Marvel female characters are pretty much covered up, I think that's more of a DC thing, the sort of Catwoman and all of their kind of, I mean, I'm not saying in the comics, obviously they're sexualized in the comics, but the MCU has tended to give them boots and quite sort of body armor and stuff, so it's not unusual. And I like both. I like having a kind of sexy, flirty Wonder Woman outfit. I didn't think that diminished her at all in the Wonder Woman film. Obviously, when it went over to Batman versus Superman, it was a male director and he had to do the panty shot. But, but in Wonder Woman, her standalone film, I liked her outfit. It was cool. And I think it's fine either way. Yeah, I thought they were both powerful, but I was far more geared up by Wonder Woman as a film. I felt much more empowered by it and much more joyous. And I just didn't get that off Captain Marvel. And I had an inkling that I wasn't going to from the trailers. I wasn't interested from the get-go.
And Wonder Woman's sort of like it's doing a very kind of similar thing in that she is from another planet and comes to Earth in a time period. And she's in Wonder Woman, she's kind of amazed by everything. She's like that. There's that ice, really good ice cream scene where she like tries ice cream for the first time and she's like, "Oh, this is amazing! You should be proud of yourself." And it's really, and there are no moments like that in Captain Marvel, partly because she
No.
is a much more
Stoic.
Stoic and self kind of self-driven character, but it is less fun to watch.
Yeah, it is. I suppose Wonder Woman's much more idealistic, isn't she? Which is a nice character arc. So when it comes to comparing the two movies, I'm much more side with Wonder Woman. I kind of came out of that just feeling sort of joyous and empowered and like cool, and I wanted to find the gifts and use them. Whereas, no, I'd probably use the cat from Captain Marvel.
We should also say that the cat in Captain Marvel is a great actor.
Apparently it's several cats.
Oh, fair
So
enough.
yeah, so I guess there's Bold Cat, there's Meowy Cat. but I did like the cat. One review I read was like, they overused the cat.
I don't think that's particularly unfair as a criticism. They
No.
do go back to the Nick Fury, fawning over it well a lot.
I know. Yeah,
But
they do. They do.
it's fine. It didn't quite wear out its welcome, but I did think there is a lot of this.
Yes, exactly. But I did enjoy the space cat. And then I did enjoy in the credits, they just like had the cat against this starry background. It was
But
really
yeah,
cool.
Marvel credit scenes have been really on point lately.
Yeah, they were beautiful. The end credits are really stunning. I think we're done. Captain
I think we
Marvel.
are.
You'd put it mid-range.
Yeah,
I'd
mid
put it.
range, lower mid range. I don't think it's a great Marvel film. I enjoyed it. I agree with you. I think Wonder Woman is a lot better and maybe the only example of the DC film universe beating Marvel to the punch on something.
Absolutely. Cool. So if you've seen it, let us know what you thought. If you loved it, which everybody seems to, it's getting like 4-star reviews and stuff, but there we go. I gave it 2.5 on my Letterboxd.
Oh, I don't know what I'm going to give it.
But let us know. We're at gameindustry.com. Mm-hmm. We're on Twitter at ArgueTheCast.
Indeed.
And in all the podcast places you could ever wish for.
Yes.
And until next time, Drew.
Cheerio.